Hey friend, guess what? We have so many designers already inside the Design Business Accelerator, and they are leveling up their businesses for 2024. Do you want in? Come on over and join us. I am sharing everything that I've learned over the past 20 years and packaged it up in easy to follow lessons so that you can have the most profitable design business, the business of your dreams. If you want to level up your process, increase your profit, or even launch your business from zero, I've got you. I've got it all inside. So if that sounds like something you want to do, check our show notes and get the link. And I'll see you inside the Design Business Accelerator Toolkit. Hope to see you there. And on to the next episode.
Ever thought about starting your own business as an interior designer? Join Liz Levin, nationally published design entrepreneur of 20 years, as she interviews experts, colleagues, and creatives to pull back the curtain on the design industry. Whether you're passionate about design, eager to start your design business, or simply curious about what happens behind the scenes, we're here to open the doors for you. Welcome to Behind the Drapery Podcast.
Hey friends, today I was excited to meet a new designer friend that I met through Instagram, Deborah DeMare. Deb is a renowned interior designer, consultant, author, and educator. She's a pioneer of the ethical wellness design movement. She's been executing beautiful living and sensory environments that contribute to the mental and physical health and well-being and the protection of animals and the planet for nearly 20 years. Her company, DeMare Design, is the only 100% cruelty-free design consulting firm specializing in the creation of organic, optimal spaces and sourcing vegan textiles and sustainable furniture that bear zero to low toxins. We got into some sensitive topics around animal cruelty that might not be for everyone, just a heads up, but it was interesting to me to learn more about what goes into the products that we buy in our home. Deborah heads vegandesign.org, where she educates consumers and designers about humane and healthy design through virtual courses, a blog, and a full online shop of cruelty-free, vegan, and low-toxin furniture, decor, and curated spaces. I really love getting to meet Deb. I definitely look forward to staying connected to her. I think you'll get a lot out of this super interesting episode on a topic we don't always dig into when we're talking about designing spaces. Buckle up, friends. Let's jump into another episode of Behind the Drapery. I'm your host, Liz Levin.
Hello, how are you?
I am sitting on the steps behind my office because it's so noisy.
It's actually kind of a cool background.
I'm looking at it. You know what? It looks fake, actually, doesn't it?
Does the brick steps. I'm loving it. It's kind of the angular feature. I know I can't see either. We can put on our reading glasses. It's fine.
How are you? So nice to meet you.
So nice to meet you too. I'm great. I'm so glad this worked out. And thank you for making time.
Where in DC are you? I lived there many years ago.
Oh, you did? Oh, where were you exactly?
I was in Potomac.
Great. We're in Bethesda. So we're...
There used to be... Okay, this was 30 years ago that I lived there. I'm from New York originally. This is when I used to eat meat. Rio Grande. It was a Mexican...
Oh my gosh, famous.
Is it still there?
I think so. Although I say that and I haven't been in so long. That was one of the ones like after dinner drinks.
Great Mexican restaurant. And like, it was like, I think every president had gone, there was a casual place where I remember the lines were endless.
Cactus Cantina is another big one that's closer to us too. No, not that one.
I love your bookcase.
Thank you so much. This is my home office where all the magic happens.
It's beautiful. It's lovely. I did greens in the house in the Hudson Valley project. I don't know if I'm doing a whole video series on it. And I did like a soft mint green.
I've been seeing more mint. I love it. It's soft. It's kind of retro, but feels very modern.
Yeah, I love green. It's my favorite color.
Me too. I did the dark studio green at the base cabinetry of my kitchen renovation. I'm just obsessed with it because it's, you want color, but not something so overwhelming. And
yeah, it's just beautiful. It looks lovely.
Oh, thank you. Oh my goodness. Well, where should we jump in? I have so many.
Ask away. I don't shut up. I'm so used to talking so much. You'll just have to shut me up.
Well, this is a perfect match because I actually struggle with the Zoom format because I feel like I'm talking while the other person's talking and it's not good for the recording. We have a great editor who will make it perfect.
Wonderful.
Well, I kind of want to start, you know, as we talked about in the email, the frame of this is really to talk about how you got into design, the specialty that you're into, and the lens is for people getting into the industry now and sort of, you know, how they, what information they can glean from those of us that have been veterans for so long. So take me back in the Wayback Machine to how you got started and like, how did you get into the field of design and what was your avenue of entry?
If anyone had told me that I would be in the field of design, I would have laughed in their face because I have absolutely no patience.
So, that's funny.
Born and bred in New York. So, you know, we're not known for our patience. I was a full-time mom till my children went to school. I have twins. When they went to school, I said, okay, now I'm ready to start working part-time. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at many different businesses to do part-time. And a friend of mine asked me to decorate her home, just a couple rooms in her home. She'd gotten a new home and I helped her decorate. And then I remember she called me a couple months later and she said, Deb, my neighbor's going to call you. I told her you're a decorator. I'm like, I'm not a decorator. And she said, she's going to call you. She wants to pay you to help you. And I was like, really? Right. So this woman called me and I said, listen, I love my friend Sandy, but I'm not a decorator. But I'd be more than happy to help you. We went to a fabric store. And to this day, I love fabrics. I love fabrics. I could be in a fabric store for 14 hours. You know, it's my favorite part of design. And we went and we were there a couple hours. And I remember she just gave me a check. Like I realized how unprofessional I was and probably how why she took advantage of me now.
Because
she gave me a check. I don't even remember what it was for, like maybe $100 or something. I remember I looked at that check like it was $10 million. It felt so good.
Yeah.
You know, being like, I love motherhood and I love my children, but just like having a check, like it was an amazing feeling. And from that, her mom called me, her cousin called me. Every person I would walk into their home, I'm like, listen, I'm not a real decorator. And they're like, okay, so here's what we want to do.
We've seen what you can do. Don't say that, right? No, it's so true. Imposter syndrome starting out. I certainly did.
Right. And I remember when people would ask me a question, can you do this? I would say, you know, let me get back to you because I had no idea. I became very friendly with a woman that I work out with. She was a big time designer. And you look now, and this is when I always tell people the bit of advice I give, there's no competition. We all work together.
Yes.
Just as this woman did for me, she said, here's what you're going to do. You're going to call this guy. I'm like, I just got this project. I don't know. They want to call this guy and he's going to, and she just was my mentor. And that's how my business really started. And it just kind of kept growing. And before long, I was on TLC as a designer. Again, a client of mine, he worked with Discovery Networks and he happened to be in their office. Casting office or whatever, when they were like, we're looking for this final designer. We can't find this designer for this show. It's like, I have the perfect person. And he called me and I'm like, I'm not a designer.
Let me repeat.
And when I went in for the audition, the first time they put my camera, I'm like, look, I don't know what he told you, but I have no degree. I have no, it's like, I was constantly like.
Constantly firing yourself from all these jobs that people were handing you.
Right.
That's incredible. Oh my gosh.
So then I became a designer on In A Fix. And it was really funny because we were like a cast of, I don't know, 7-8 people. I mean, a crew of 100 behind you, but I was the only one without any of that technical training. So the cast used to make fun of me. Like they would say, Deb, could you go in the truck and get the Swahili kabuli? And I would go to the guy and I'd say, listen, Jen wants the Swahili bahubi. And they're like, what? And they'd all start cracking up because I had like no technical training, you know? But that was getting into the trenches, you know, and that really, I mean, you're under a lot of pressure and you really learn how to really use your brain and think out of the box. And I think that my lack of formal training has been my best part of experience.
Yes.
Because how are you? Because I treat every project, I think I approach it very differently because I don't have that formal training. I have to think out of the box. Mm-hmm. I think about budget. I think as a mother, that it's got to be durable. It's got to be practical. It's got to work. I don't want people cursing me 6 months later saying, why did she sell us this fabric that if we breathe on it, it's falling apart.
Totally.
And I just think differently. My process is very different as well, because I'm very much into sensory design and healthy design. So I really, the questions I ask my clients for the first 30 minutes have nothing to do with design.
What are those questions like in the first?
Like I just ask them, like, I'll say like, so tell me like a typical Sunday, you know, just you guys, just tell me a typical Sunday, you know, because I want to know who they are. Mm-hmm. And what their path is in their home.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, okay, what time do you wake up? Because I like to know what time people wake up. Because to me, that says a lot about someone as well. I like to know what they eat for breakfast.
Oh my gosh, I wasn't expecting that. Okay. Yeah.
I like to know, do they prepare their own coffee? Like, I just want as much detail, like as nitty gritty detail as possible. And I found that that has really helped me kind of like getting into the soul of the person. I always look for like a nucleus of a home.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, I always will find out, is there a place that you guys hang out? Mm-hmm. And if there is no place that people hang out as a family, that's a truly dysfunctional family. That's what my opinion is after doing design all these years, that if there's no nucleus within the home of a family, that it's a quite separate family and there's a lot of turmoil, you know, things like that. So how would I design for that? You know, so.
And the psychological analysis. I used to joke starting out, that's my background is in psychology. That's what I studied. I too am self-taught and I have no design degree, sort of learned by doing. But I used to call that first meeting, and I still do, an intake session where we walk around and like lay on the couch, tell me everything. But your questions are really, they're different from the normal. I ask how people are. I love it because it really does get to the heart and soul of the lifestyle of the family and the functionality of the family. And like you said, so maybe the dysfunction of the family and how to work.
Yes. Yes. And so I just think that things like that, you know, it's always interesting to know if anyone in the family has any sort of developmental or sensory or neurological challenge. And I approach that very cautiously, but I've designed many spaces for people with autism. So It's all connected. I mean, we all create the same things. It's just more exacerbated with someone with any kind of sensory challenge. So I think finding out if they like to have their coffee while sitting outside, looking at the grass or at the beach or wherever they are, the mountains, or whether they right away like to go into their home office and sit down first with the papers and have privacy. To me, that is telling me a bit about them and how I'm going to think about their spaces.
I love that. I think that goes to a deeper level than maybe most people do when they're going in as designers, looking at the aesthetics and maybe the practical parts of where do you like to sit or where do you like to hang out or how many people live here.
So from that, what happened was about 10 years ago, I love animals and my family, we love animals. I mean, our lives revolved around animals. In our office, we have two dogs. You know, we have so many animals in our family, it's insane. And I'm involved with many different animal rights organizations, Woodstock Sanctuary, Catskill, PETA, Farm Sanctuary, Mercy for Animals. I mean, just goes on and on because they're all such great organizations. And PETA was one of the first organizations I got involved with. And I was always getting videos from PETA. And I always say you have to be ready for change in life. You know, it's a process, right? You have to be ready for it. So I was always getting these videos, you know, and I didn't want to open any of them because I just didn't.
Right.
So I prefer to live my little, you know, Hippocratic world and with my head under the sand. And one day I opened it, one of the video that kept coming across my feed, and it was about dog leather. I looked at the video and I said, I'm done. You know, that's it. No more anything animal based, nothing animal based, no more leather, no more wool, no more silk, no more down, nothing. And because leather is, you know, China's the leading exporter of leather. And in China, they eat dogs. We eat cows here. They eat dogs. And a skin can be anything.
Really?
Yes. So you have dogs, cats, raccoon dogs, seal, kangaroo. It's not just cows. And of course, now that I'm so involved with animal rights, cows are just big puppies. They're the most adorable animals in the world. They're literally puppies.
Yeah.
So, but we as Americans have that distinction with dogs and we eat the meat, you know?
Right. Livestock versus pets, right?
Right, right. And there's absolutely no difference. And so that's when I became vegan in my company. And without me realizing it, I was just doing it purely for ethical reasons. I started getting emails from designers. And I'll never forget, the first email was from a designer from Australia. And she's like, listen, I see that you're a vegan designer. I'm looking for resources. I'm like, how do you know that I'm doing this? She's like, well, you're number one on Google. I'm like, I am? Like, I had no clue what I was doing. And she's like, you're the expert. I'm like, I'm not an expert. I'm just doing this because I love animals. Truly.
Like, here I go again.
Right? But then I did a deep dive and I started learning because no one was doing what I was doing. I was like the pioneer in vegan design. And we kept getting so many emails. that were like, you know what, let me make a course, the vegan design course. And I mean, I can't tell you, I think it's been taken in almost every country, like from Saudi Arabia, like places that, yeah. Japan, all over the world, people, Israel, everywhere, all over Europe. I mean, in places like Alabama, in the US, I mean, just Texas, bizarre places that I guess because I have that Northeast mentality, I'm thinking, okay, the North, the California, the New York. So everyone started taking this course. And then I wrote a book.
How many students did you all across the world? And I'm curious, do you have, like, generally speaking, are we talking hundreds?
Thousands.
Yeah. Wow. I'm surprising, right? I wouldn't have imagined.
And then I wrote a book on vegan design, and I speak all the time about cruelty-free design. I interchange it depending on the audience, because vegan sometimes still has the woohoo, you know, people think granola, and I make it cruelty-free, which is different than vegan in a way. It is vegan, but it's not testing on animals, because you can have a vegan product that's still not cruelty-free.
How so? Like,
for example, buying vegan vitamins, but they're still tested on animals. Awful. So it's an awful industry. That anything that you're using animals for in mass quantity is just horrific. And it's not only horrific for the animals, it's horrific for the workers. There's absolutely no regulations in these countries. So I just learned so much.
Something I haven't considered in that way. I mean, when we bring in products and we ask about allergies, I mean, that's scratching the surface of obviously of what you're talking about. I wouldn't have thought, I haven't thought about pesticides or what's all the chemicals that are used to produce. I mean, mm-hmm. about the synthetic products, like, you know, sort of the synthetic leathers or the vegan leathers, or we call them yacht leathers because they're waterproof. Right. What about that chemical makeup? Is that better, or do you have to be well educated on that too? Because it sounds like they're loaded with chemicals that can cause all the different disruptors, right? And your system. Tell me more about how to practice safe vegan leather, animal-free, cruelty-free. I think what you were describing makes everything, I mean, everything seems to have an animal byproduct involved. How do
So if you have to, I will always try to dissuade people even from getting a faux leather. But if they want a leather look and a faux leather, between the two, between a real animal product and a faux leather, you're better off with the faux level leather. It has less chemicals and it has less environmental impact.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because real leather, the amount of water and food and deforestation, and it's just endless. And obviously the ethics behind it, the tragedy in the blood for humans and not. So if you have to choose between the two, go with the faux. However, for me, the ideal materials to use would be something like GOTH certified, Okotex certified. That's like what we always first look at. And then we work down. So I would always choose an organic linen, an organic cotton over anything else. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as durability, it is a trade-off. Let's face it. It is a trade-off. However, I always say, if you're healthier, you're going to go to the doctor less, right? So right. Maybe you're saving money in that space.
Invest in your health rather than your sickness, as they say. You can spend time being healthy or time being sick.
Right. So as far as your paints, yes, I would go with the more cheap paint is loaded with VOCs. Loaded with VOCs. Don't buy cheap paint. Don't paint. Wait till you can get a gallon of paint that has lower zero VOCs, because that stuff, and they still say they don't know when the off-gassing stops. Some people say 2 years, some people say 10 years, some people say it never does. No one knows.
Really? Because no one's measuring this.
No. Or when they are, it's not, they don't have it down yet. I remember as a kid, we used to, when the room was painted, we'd have to wait till the smell went away. A day. Same with the carpets.
Oh my gosh, they still, I mean, I remember when I painted my girls' nurseries, it was in the early days of those green paints by Benjamin Moore. I just assumed if they were green and low VOC, they were good. I didn't, you know, I was busy. I didn't dig too deeply. Do you have favorite brands that you like to recommend for paints?
Of course, I love Farron Gold.
Yeah.
I love Fine Paints of Europe. And Benjamin Moore has EcoSpec, which I think is a great line.
Mm-hmm.
And we use that a lot. And they can do any color.
They can, yeah.
And so those are my top three.
Okay. Is Farron Ball a green paint? I guess I should know that because I use it, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. That's why it's expensive. It's more expensive.
Mm-hmm. It is. I just didn't know that was an added benefit. I love the color, the way they change the light, but okay. Clearly, I'm not paying attention to something I need to pay attention to.
It's hard that we have so much to pay attention to. And that's another thing. People are like, oh my God, it's so overwhelming.
Yeah.
Don't make it overwhelming. Start with baby steps. You know, if you're doing a room, tell yourself within the year, I'm going to try to have five things in this room or switch out five things that are healthier. Well, because the two of them are married to one another. You can't have something that's If it's unethical, it's going to be loaded with toxins. So that's kind of a measure for yourself. So okay. Anything animal-based is loaded with toxins.
Anything.
So that's an easy way to right away describe, you know, to decide, do I go with the cotton or do I go with the polyester or do I go with the wool? Don't go with the wool. Don't go with the leather.
I would think, just thinking about rugs and handmade rugs, obviously are wool and silk, all of those.
Yeah. So what I've had to, one of the biggest adjustments for me was in the rugs, because it's very difficult to find that beautiful vintage looking gorgeous,
yes,
heavily gaudy rug in a nylon or a cotton or a polyester. Just doesn't exist.
Very hard.
And if they do, they're god awful. So I've learned just to do neutral rugs, zhuzh it up with the pillows and the window treatments and the other things. They're completely sustainable, completely vegan. I use them sometimes for outdoors, but I'm also someone who needs practicality. And I mean, if you spill a drop of water on them, they stain. So they're great for some people. And I do use them like in beach homes and outdoor areas, mm-hmm. But for indoor, I mean, I also, to me, it's important, the sensory experience. So when you put your feet, you know, if you're barefoot, that's something I also ask families, are you barefoot a lot in the house? Because if you are, that's going to make me decide against using a porcelain or a ceramic because it's cold on your feet.
Right. Or if kids are crawling around the floors, a lot of my clients say, we're at that stage, we're sitting on the ground, we want something plush. In that case, you said you think maybe a polyester kind of blend.
Nylon. I mean, and if you have babies, what I'll always say is get the cheapest organic cotton rug you can, because the babies are mouthing that rug
all the time.
They're constantly mouthing.
Yes.
And then in a year or two, you donate it or you throw it out.
Mm-hmm.
Or you return it over and recycle it. So it really depends on your stage of life.
And advice for designers, you were saying start with, or people, anyone. But if someone, a designer was, you know, like you discovered how important this is, became an important issue to them, what's changing one or two things in a room? What if someone decided, I'm just going to change everything and this is going to be my focus and my approach? What's the best advice you would give? How did you change over entirely? Was it gradual? Did you wake, you said you woke up one day and you were done. So then every product you sourced with.
Start with a room or start with like an item. So saying, I'm going to, within the next year, and set a goal. Like I was saying, my mother says, without a dated goal is nothing, you know. Say in a year,
mm-hmm.
this room is going to be as non-toxic as possible, meaning you're going to change the paint, you're going to change the bedding. Bedrooms are really good places to start, because to me, they're the most important room in a home. We spend a third of our life there. We sleep, wrap our bodies. Our bodies get warm. Everything that's touching our skin is a sponge.
Mm-hmm.
We're absorbing everything. All those chemicals we're inhaling because we're warm and we're breathing deeply when we sleep. So start with the bedroom. Paint, bedding. That's a good place to start. Or you can say, every decorative pillow I'm going to switch out for a down alternative and a cover that's not toxic. You can start with things like that. Rugs. I'm going to replace one rug every 3 months. Just make it small.
Then it's manageable and it doesn't feel overwhelming and it's not a huge investment up front as you're switching things out. That's interesting about where you sleep. And, you know, I know that clean beauty has come a long way too. And as, you know, he's talking about skin and what we're absorbing, we forget about the sheets and the off-gassing of your rug and your paint.
Yeah, like I'll go into a vegan restaurant, I'm sitting on a leather chair.
You're kidding. So,
because people don't make the connection.
Oh, to the home. I was thinking, one question I had was, do you feel physically different after changing out animal products in your home?
I know this might sound very woo-woo, but I'm a real believer in energy, true believer in energy. And I always had a thing when I started my business, I would never purchase things from showrooms where the salespeople were not kind and nice.
Like
I felt like I was bringing that bad energy into my client's home.
Uh-huh.
So now it's just gone another step above. I will not, to me, bringing in a down spilled sofa or a wool rug to a client would be bringing in such tragedy and such blood and despair is attached to that item that I'm bringing it into your home, into your sacred space. I don't do any of that. So yes, I personally feel better. And some clients, when I tell them that there are some clients that I work with that have no idea that we focus on chemicals and nothing animal based because it's a referral. They don't even like check anything. And at the end of the project, I'll always tell them, you know, by the way, nothing in here is animal based. It's all luxury, high end. And there is absolutely no negative energy attached to your home. It's only positive. And everyone's like, wow. Like even the people that are like the straight arrows,
They're
like, wow, that's so cool. I'm like, yeah, isn't it amazing?
So they have no, so you like to sort of do it as a nice bonus reveal. Like here you are experiencing this high-end design and you don't feel an inkling of sacrifice or substitution because you've already done the legwork of finding all these beautiful things for their home that are cruelty-free and chemical-free. I was wondering if you would present it up front and say, hey, here's what I bring to the table. But
because people, I've learned over the years, you want the client to make the decision. Mm-hmm. The minute you have to, it's like anything with kids. The minute you say, you can't do that, you can't do it, they're going to be like, I'm doing it whether she wants it or not, right? Especially, you know, we have, I'm sure you've had some doozies of clients. So,
right? Yes. Yes, right. We have.
Oh, yes, we have. So for me, it's always about them making the decision. Mm-hmm. So if they want, I want a beautiful leather couch in this library, no problem. What we go to present, I bring them a real leather sample and I bring them a gorgeous, just as expensive faux leather. I'm like, here are the options I brought for you. I just, you know, this is your decision. This is real leather. Why don't you scratch it? And they scratch it. I'm like, look, you see the scratch mark? That stinks. You want to scratch this one? They scratch it. Oh, see, this is a really high-end faux leather. Let's pour some juice on it because you have kids. Oh, the real leather. Yeah, it stains. It's a skin. So it's going to stink. Let's pour it on this one. So I think we should go with the faux, right? And they're like, oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I do that for all of our kitchens and ottomans for that reason, not having the same, you know, premise behind it, but for durability, those vegan leathers, absolutely. But you're saying you give them the choice of the real and then you show the practicality of it.
And it's educating. It's like everyone. It's like if you have education under your belt, then you can have the power to make the right decision. So you have to think anyone who hires us doesn't have either the education or the want or the know-how to decorate their spaces. So right. We have to very gently and very respectfully give them the tools, the education. You know, I came up with another course. It's my favorite course we created about a year ago. It's for how to design cruelty-free and non-toxic kids' spaces, nurseries and kids' spaces. It's same thing for adults, but it's a really great course. And I've actually given it to some of our clients and they just love it. Because we go into, I have a naturopedic founder, I have Lisa Bronner from Dr. Bronner's, I have a sleep expert, I have an occupational therapist talking about sensory design, plus teaching people how. And just that course, which is for designers, by the way, I have a coupon code to give you if any one of you in your audience would like to take it.
Yeah, we'll link it in the show notes too, so everyone can find both courses and then learn more.
So I think it's really about educating. It's about giving people the education without force feeding it to them.
Giving people choice. And also with the new moms, expecting moms, can't talk today. The expecting moms, it's so nice to have it encapsulated in a easy to digest, you know, you've already done the research and here are your steps. Here's the things you need to know and where to find them is so helpful because you're already overwhelmed by becoming a parent and all of the things.
Yeah, I did this course. We made it. I'm like, I want this course to be under 2 hours. It has to be, they can take it whenever they want because none of us have time, especially like you're saying, a pregnant woman, a new mom, you know, you don't have the time and you don't have the head.
Yes.
So it's going to be so laid out simply for you.
Easy, step by step.
Yeah.
So have you seen your audience grow since you started this how many years ago? You
said, I started design over 20 years ago.
And then you shifted into the cruelty-free, how long?
And now it's, COVID had a lot to do with everything. I think people were stuck in their homes and they really had to assess their living environment.
That makes sense in a lot of ways. And probably, what you're in, right? And thinking about a pandemic and germs, and then also what else is in my home and the air filtration and all of that, everyone was looking at it in a way that they hadn't before.
So I think that's really propelled things.
And how do you see the future of cruelty-free design? What do you see coming ahead? Do you see designers showing more interest in sustainability and chemical free these days? Is it growing quickly? What are some of your thoughts on how the industry is?
Oh, I think it's growing exponentially because I think that people are becoming more educated and more aware. I mean, look at the, like you're saying, beauty products, skin products.
Yeah. And they're and clothing better.
Clothing. And now it's going into furnishings and decor in your environments. Because also the wealthy, the newer, wealthier generations are more involved in experiences than they are, you know, in our parents' time, a wealthy person of ultra wealth would have 10 homes and they'd have a Rolls Royce and tons of diamonds and jewelry. And now it's different. They'd rather have a beautiful meditation space.
Yes.
Or a bathroom that converts into a spa. It's more about it creating a sensory. And now for something, for example, autism was no one ever talked about it. Now it's a mainstream word.
Definitely.
So sensory spaces. is becoming much more common.
We didn't get to talk much about creating sensory spaces. Tell me a little bit about that work. I'm curious, what are you brought in to do typically, or how do you find those? How do those clients find you when they need you as a resource?
If you go into 10 homes, you speak to the owners and you ask them if there's anyone in their family or extended family that has any kind of even minor sensory challenge, 10 of those homes will say yes, if they're being honest. I think that...
Really?
Yeah. I think that almost everyone has someone in their family with some sort of sensory challenge. That's what we've seen.
How would you define a sensory challenge for those not?
Someone who's, for example, someone who gets the overstimulation, the sounds of noises, loud noises becomes too much for them. It actually is painful for them. Tags on a shirt for you and I might just be bothersome to them. It's painful. They can't concentrate. A child with ADHD can't sit still. He can't focus. He has issues focusing. He can, but he's just not the right environment. And then there's ADHD inattentive, where that's the child that just sits in the class so sweet and doesn't bother anyone, but yet is completely slipping through the cracks. They need stimulation in their environment. Mostly the boys with ADHD regular, where they have problems focusing, or they get what's called hyperfocus, where a bomb can go off around them if they're doing something they love.
I've seen that.
Right. So for someone with hyperfocus, we would never want to put like a whirring fan in a room because they can hyperfocus on that. We might consider putting a rocking chair because that can get rid of some of the energy and allow their body to relax, and therefore they can concentrate.
Interesting.
So it's really fascinating. And all, I always say we're all the same. It's just degrees of
sensitivity.
So none of us want to have our back to the door. We just don't. Doesn't feel right. To someone with sensory issues, that's a real problem. But most of us don't want that.
Right. A chi, the energy thing? Is that?
Yeah, it's very true. That's why I like to know in the morning, you know, if people are barefoot, because that's sensory. You know, we have a lot of nerve endings on the bottom of our feet. So when we put our foot down on the ground first thing in the morning, what do we want that sensation to be? Well, I want that to be nice and comforting. So do I need to put a rug under their bed, or do they right away say, no, I put slippers on immediately. I don't want a rug. Okay. Well, now I know that they're going to have a positive sensory experience the moment they wake up.
So fascinating. I mean, the level of detail and sort of how you think about every moment of their life in the home is fascinating to me, and not something I typically consider down to that level. So I find it really interesting and helpful to hear. I want to add that into my repertoire. You know?
There you go.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I'll be asking people what they want to step on when they get out of bed and really get to know them. I was asking how they entertain and, you know, how many people flow through, but I was not getting deep enough, clearly.
Right. There you go. You have a whole new level now, Liz.
I have a whole new level. You know, I want to expand that to other designers getting into the field. I mean, it sounds like this is something that is a growing area of interest. As you said, as the generations are coming up after.
Yeah. If you ever want to do a masterclass together, you just let me know.
That would be great. I'm excited to share this with our, you know, students, and then the folks that are, I've gotten a lot of great feedback of people that listen and get inspired and really move forward in their business with this little podcast project. So I'm excited to share your expertise with them. Do you have any other nuggets that you definitely want to impart on that next generation of designers, or we can link to your courses to let them discover themselves?
Yeah, I think they should definitely consider the nursery and kids room design course, because again, that's for adults as well. But I think that really embodies everything that I believe and that I focus on. And there's a lot of good tools in there that they'll have great takeaways, and it's very easy to understand. I'll email you the link and the coupon code. But I think also, as I said in the beginning, one thing that I have seen with younger designers is they need to not worry about competition. You need to work together. You have to work together because you learn from one another. I learned something from you. You learned something from me. I'm doing a project in California. Hey, you know what? I'm going to call that designer that I Would you like to share the project with me? I need someone to manage that project. We had a project in Dubai.
Wow.
We have a designer in Dubai helping us oversee the project.
It's so true. I saw something that said collaboration is a higher vibration than competition. And I have found that to be true in my own career journey, where I was able to find a mentor and fellow designers that wanted to share and really help and connect you with vendors and resources. And because there's enough work for everybody, you know, there really is. And there's a different designer for every project, or you know, we all have our unique traits that are special to us. That's why they're unique, and other people find their own clients that work well for them. Well, thank you, Deb. I really appreciate you being here today.
It's so nice to meet you, Liz. I'm so happy that we got to do this.
Me too. I feel like I learned a lot and I'm excited to stay connected. And I'm just
wonderful.
So
grateful. My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Behind the Drapery, where we pull back the curtain on the interior design industry through stories, insights, and creative processes that shape the spaces we create. Make sure you subscribe to get the latest episodes from your favorite podcast platform. And visit our website at lizlevininteriors.com for more information.